a sturdy ancient Schwinn with a flaking paint job and a touch of rust. But the running gear and brakes were brand new Campy and Shimano. The tires were Gators, and the seat cost more than the frame. It was comfortable and stopped on a dime and got 40 miles to the gallon of Heineken. It had two big reed baskets, one of which held his travel bag, carefully chosen after a couple of hours browsing in pawn shops and thrift stores. It was beat-up khaki nylon, scuffed but strong, with lots of compartments and a lock. The middle part held a week's worth of clothes and dehydrated meals, and side pockets held wallet and change and a notebook, along with hardware like a bottle opener and flashlight and Swiss Army knife. What had really sold him on this one was a side pocket under a Velcro flap, large enough for a Glock 9mm and two spare clips. Under his shirt he carried a snub-nosed Smith & Wesson Chief Special 38 Airweight, the kind of gun a private eye always had in the movies. But Steve knew too much about guns to rely on it alone. And Hunter was doubtless a big man. In Alabama, he'd left three footprints in mud while he was carrying a 200-pound victim. A police lab report said it would take at least 500 pounds to drive his size 14s that deep. To kill him with a 38, you'd have to hit him in the eye or right down the ear, and Steve didn't want to get that close while the beast was still alive. He recited the LAPD mantra, two in the chest, one in the head. The first would get his attention, the second would kill him, and the third would kill him again, if he were human. At Mr. Steinhardt's insistence, he had a radio beacon superglued to the underside of the seat. It used two hearing aid batteries and would run for more than a year. If he were killed and the bike tossed somewhere, the cops could track it from 50 miles away. They might even find his body nearby. If he were actually following the Southern Tier Trail, he'd start in the middle of St. Augustine. But Hunter wasn't going to nab anyone off a city street, so he studied the bus route and had the Greyhound drop him and his bike off at Molasses Junction. It was like a scene out of The Grapes of Wrath. Bare dirt from horizon to horizon, a steady north wind, cold in the bleak sunshine, blowing needle-sharp sand into his face. He'd be headed west, so only his right ear would fill up with dirt. The only building at the Molasses Junction crossroads was a general store. He locked his bike up, feeling foolishly urban, and carried his bag inside the dark, dusty place. Mostly bare shelves. With the dust storm rattling the windows, it all felt like a set from a Woody Guthrie movie. With himself, a fugitive from a Humphrey Bogart noir flick, armed to the teeth with no target in sight. A tired old woman came out of the back room, wiping her hands on a bloody rag. Actually, tomato guts. Behind her, he could see a canning setup boiling and a case of empty ketchup bottles.
"What, you want something?"
She wasn't really that old. Her face was creased with fatigue, the lines stark in deep sunburn, maybe kitchen heat. Her body was not old, curves and muscle straining tight jeans and tank top. She turned halfway to adjust a Slim Jim's display and not incidentally reveal that she was wearing a snub-nosed pistol in a butt holster. Probably smart in an isolated place like this, but the opposite of sexy. He considered buying a box of 38 special rounds to establish fellow feeling, but decided against it.
"Just a Coke. And a Slim Jim."
"In the machine there."
It was the kind of cooler he hadn't seen since he was a little boy, a big red icebox with a sliding top. Inside, bottles of drinks racked in ice-cold water. He pulled out a 12-ounce Coke in a heavy returnable bottle, also a time trip. There was a bottle opener at the cash register, which clanged and made satisfying greased metal sounds. He got a quarter change for his dollar and a finger touch of warm flesh.
You need something, just holler.
He watched the 38 swivel back to the stockroom. A good place to begin an adventure. Sex and guns and Mother Nature outside playing the noir witch. Forget Arlene and the evaporating check and weepy mom and dear old dad. Just you and me, monster. I'm coming to get you. Two. I was able to finish most of a chapter while she slept. She envied me for being able to get along on 5 or 6 hours sleep. I envied her for being able to stay down for 10. She was always more rested than me, but then I theoretically had more time to work. An extra 40-hour week every 10 days. If only I could get paid for reading trash fiction and watching TV, I'd be a wealthy man. But this particular morning I did write and was pretty happy with it. So was Kit. She read through it while we had motel room instant in paper cups. Would they really have to shoot him in the eye or the ear? I mean, in the real world? They say people who kill people for a living don't like 38s. The army stopped using them in the Spanish-American War, the Philippine part. The enraged Moro natives would absorb several shots and just keep coming. Pretty tough customers. Well, they tied leather thongs around their balls before they went into combat. The leather got wet and constricted, and the pain drove them mad. That's got to be bullshit, she said. Racist bullshit. They couldn't walk. Hey, I read it in a book. That's why the army changed from the 38 to the 45. The 45 bullet was big enough to knock them down. But they don't use the 45 anymore. You said you had a 9mm in the desert. That's got to be smaller. She rubbed her chin. 45/100ths of an inch is like 12mm, way smaller. Yeah, I guess. But it knocks them down better. Goodness. Smaller is better. Where will it all end? A tiny little bullet, obviously, that moves at the speed of light. A photon. Have to be a heavy photon. I'm sure they're working on it. I should have paid attention in physics. How could a photon weigh anything if it always moved at the speed of light? If it didn't move at the speed of light, it wouldn't be a photon. So is the monster really from another planet? He thinks he is. Yeah, but you know, don't you? Right now he's Schrodinger's cat, and I haven't opened the box. Ah. She took a sip of coffee. So you don't know yet? I wagged a pedantic finger at her. That's not what I said. She squinted at me while wheels turned. She was the one who first told me about the paradox. Mr. S.'s cat is in a box, presumably soundproofed, with a gun pointed at its helpless little head. The gun will go off if the trigger is struck by an alpha particle from an alpha particle generator that the cat's sadistic owner purchased at the local quantum hardware store. Schrodinger's point was that because of the quantum nature of elementary particles, there was only a probability, not a certainty, that the alpha particle had done its job. You couldn't tell whether the cat was alive or dead without opening the box, which takes the problem out of the quantum universe and into the real world. Of course, in the real world, there would or would not be a smoking hole in the box and cat brains all over the place, but that's not what scientists mean by real.
That's cute, Jack. You mean it literally?
I shrugged.
So right now, in your mind, the monster is both a human and an alien.
I almost didn't say anything. I trickled a little bit of rum into my coffee. Until I opened the box, I said. I had a weather card, but hadn't charged it. and of course didn't bring the adapter, but the morning sky was seamless blue, and the weekend forecast had been good when we left home. So we filled our water bottles and pedaled off into deepest, darkest Iowa. Which is to say, sunny rolling hills with wildflowers anthropomorphically nodding approval as we cruised by on our modest quest. Then the smallest gray cloud peeked over the western horizon, and then it loomed, and then all hell broke loose. Lightning and thunder and a screaming gale pelting us with fast, fat drops. Lightning blasted a copse of trees not 100 yards in front of us while I was looking at it and trying to decide whether to stop there for shelter. Then Kit's bike slipped on gravel and she went down hard. Gloves protected her hands, but her left knee was torn and the shoulder hurt. The bike was all right, but she couldn't ride it, left leg stiffening. She couldn't even push it, really. Neither of our cell phones got a signal. "Let's just lock it and leave it here," I shouted over the wind. "If somebody steals it, they steal it." She nodded, her face screwed tight. "You go on for help. Or back to the motel?" "No, I'm not leaving you." We compromised by hiding the bike behind a sign and piling all her stuff on the back of mine, which I then trundled back toward the tidy inn while she limped alongside. I wasn't much of a companion, pushing the double load through pelting rain and grit. I sort of wasn't there, going into a kind of Zen state familiar from the desert. You can get through anything 1 minute at a time. When the minute's up, do another minute. Go blank, stay blank. So she startled me when she cried out, "There! There it is!" A dim red vacancy sign flickering in the gathering gloom. Only 2 hours and 20 minutes of trudge. The cruddy place did look 1,000% more comfortable than it had the evening before. The old crone got all maternal and taped up Kit's leg. She let us have the same room for $10 off, since it hadn't been made up yet. I could have collapsed into a pile of dirty laundry and slept for a week. Kit filled the tub while I worked over the bike a little with paper towels and WD-40. Slipping into the water was pure heaven, almost literally, like dying quietly and drifting off to a somnolent reward. We both fell asleep and woke up in cooling soup. While the tub drained, we scrubbed each other with the hand shower attachment, more giggles than hygiene. We carried lightweight emergency meals, dehydrated ramen or rice with mystery meat, just add hot water and pray, but decided to have regular food whenever it was available. So, when we checked in, we'd made a call to one of the Amana Colony's restaurants, The Wheel, that did home dinner deliveries. I got dressed enough to open the door at 8, and a teenaged boy brought in armloads of styrofoam boxes. The minimum order, a family dinner for 4. Famished, we tore into the mountain of roast pork and sausage, mashed potatoes, green beans, beets, yams, and all. We didn't open the container of pickled ham, the place's specialty, saving it for tomorrow, wrapped up along with a loaf of fresh bread and some butter. The motel TV only had network, so we lay in bed and watched Mind Rot for a while.